3-day weekends are the stuff happiness is made of, especially when it's time for Haverty's July 4th sale, where literally everything is on sale. Sadly, every 3-day weekend has to end eventually, but your new furniture will bring you happiness for years to come. Haverty's, we furnish happiness.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Just in time.
We are live.
What up? Here we are. Sorry, we were all just preparing for talk about cannabis hour, but you know what? Here we are. Stonks only go up, Mr. GRB0X. Y'all, welcome to Thursday cannabis hour. We've been talking in cannabis stocks all week. We chatted to Nick Kovacevic, CEO of Kushco. On Monday, that was we being Javier and Patrick. That's NASDAQ listed KSHB. Next week, we're going to have interviews from Cleverleaf CEO Kyle Detweiler and Gage President Fabian Monaco, I believe is his last name, right, Javier?
Yes, sir. Fabian Monaco.
Yeah, but you know what? Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, nothing else.
I was just going to say, but you know what we do on Thursdays, y'all? We talk to industry leaders, industry execs. We talk to them about what they're doing. And we have an exciting lineup for you today. We're going to talk to Marijuana Company of America, MCOA. They are listed as MCOA on the OTC. Very excited to talk to Jesus Quintero. I butchered your name, sir. I'm sorry. But you can correct me when
I'll
you come
out. One.
Yep. Thank you. He's going to be on here in about 10, 15 minutes. He's the CEO of MCOA. And then we're also going to have Lori Kibbe, CFO and co-founder of King's Garden.
Awesome
play in California. Javier, I'm excited.
Good week, too. I am too. I wish we could do these in person and just try some of these guys' cannabis.
Well, once we get back to in-person events, y'all, I'm going to make Javi have like a little booth for Cannabis Hour and just interview everybody. We'll just have a live stream of Cannabis Hour for like 2 days straight.
We need to make them one of those booths. Have you ever been to any of those airports where they have like the smoking booths, like in, say, Frankfurt in Germany or in Brazil? They have like these random booths around the airport where smokers just get in. This is cigarette smokers, and they suck. They smell horrible because it's cigarettes.
I'm sure.
But we need a similar one for cannabis for next event.
Hey, Done. You know what? I'm sure that technology has been invented. We need to find the company and license it. Aaron, let's kick us off, though. Get us introduced. Welcome to Cannabis Hour if you haven't been here. Aaron's going to tell you what it's about.
Yep.
Welcome to the Benzinga Cannabis Hour.
There are more people who are in favor of legalization.
I saw the benefits of it for myself.
I just have to ask, was there pot pasta in the cannabis cookbook?
Oh, it was gorgeous. There was pot pasta.
We were talking about cannabis pasta.
That opened my eyes to the cannabis industry.
It's this new industry where now billions of dollars are being made.
We're here to bring cannabis into culture.
Gets me pumped up every time. Y'all, look at those interviews, though. We've interviewed some top-notch people on this show. I'm proud of us. A lot of thanks to you, Rob.
We're close to 1 year. I think next month is a year
of the
show.
June? Yeah, oh, I think it's late June, right? Regardless, we're close to officially season two, y'all. We've been putting on this podcast for a while. And speaking of which, if you miss any of those interviews, Charlotte's Web, Canopy, Tilt, Metafarm, My gosh, they span back a year now. Al Harrington, you can find them on Apple Podcasts. Look at that. We're modern. We're there. We're hip. Javi, you know what? You start today. I talk a lot. So why don't you get us started with what you're seeing today?
I mean, let's answer first to the first person who dropped a comment in the chat, Dunkey Limit. He says, so Mexico, huh? Dropping the ball down there. I wouldn't say so. I think they're pretty close. They're pretty close to legalizing adult use. You know, only a couple signatures missing. You know, well, lobby groups pressuring.
It wasn't going to be immediate. You know, we talked about them 2-3 weeks ago, maybe longer. It's all blurred out, people. But, like, it was never going to be immediate, right? But I think, you know, the more news that comes out, it'll be closer and closer to legalization, and you're going to see some great companies there. April 30th cutoff. Javi, what do you know about that? From Donkey Limit. I love your name.
Same thing. I mean, the legislative, it's not a hard cutoff, right? It means the legislative session ends on April 30th. So they have time until then, you know, to pass a legislation during this session, during this term, right? They will resume their legislative activities after the summer, and they can go back to discussing this. Ideally, this would be passed before April 30th. You know, some of the sponsors of the bill are pretty optimistic they can generate the consensus they need. It's a matter of waiting and seeing what happens. You know, I would call it a maybe 50-50 chance right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and then, you know, Wet Bet Wall Street is asking us to get cookies here. Berner is a good friend of the house. We've done several interviews with him. We've had him at our Cannabis Capital conferences. Mm-hmm. We will get him on soon.
Done. I mean, he's a business maker. He's not only built a business that everybody just admires and points to as you want to do it right, do it like cookies. But he also partners with companies. And I send out congratulation emails to those companies for partnering with cookies. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible what they have built at cookies. And they've done it so quickly, too.
Yeah, like they say both of about Berner and about Be Real of Cypress Hill. I love this phrase. Berner is a businessman. He's a businessman, but he's also a business man.
No, well said. Well said. He's a business and a businessman. So can we all toke up and cheers to the day's gains together? You know what? We Bet Wall Street. Yes, you can toke up. I've been trying to make this a happy hour for months. And so I can have a little bourbon during this, but alas, nobody's been on board with me yet.
Oh, wait, we'll do it.
All right, we'll do it. Just don't tell Jason.
You know what they say? It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Down here in Argentina, it's 5:07.
I can hear you. Oh, and you have military time. hey, we have from Tampa Bay Buckeye. Man, Tampa Bay and Ohio. It's an interesting combo. I feel like you're an interesting person to chat with. MSOs. Looking at their chart, I mean, I'm not bullish or bearish on them right now. Obviously, an incredible MSO or an incredible ETF, excuse me. I think overall, like, I mean, a good investment, but they're just following the market right now. I mean, that's what their chart is. It's identical to a ton of other charts out there. I don't know, Javi, anything else you want to add on there? I'm not sure there's really a whole lot to talk about there. Yeah, I think it's a great play.
This is a 6-month chart. As you mentioned, it's been following the market. I do think it's a good play. I do think it's important to have an ETF focused on U.S. operators. Many very smart investors and people in the industry are betting on U.S. operators as the biggest winners.
Makes sense.
Long term. It does make sense. Most, you know, it is often the case that U.S. variants of any company in any industry tend to dominate globally. Mm-hmm. It's not rare. I mean, it's not like there aren't a million soda companies out there and still there's one Coca-Cola. It's not like there aren't a bazillion fast food restaurant chains. Still, you know, the leaders around the world are McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's, right? Yeah. You know, it's just the way it is. And about U.S. operators, we have news out of Cresco today.
Yes, we do. It actually came out during Cannabis Insider yesterday, and I was so bummed that I didn't get an alert on my phone because I have alerts in these Twitter, and I looked at it about 10 minutes after we were done, and I saw the alert. So, Javi, go for it. What is this news that we should have reported yesterday, darn it?
It's news that is not news, but it's news. So OTCQX CRLBF, they announced yesterday that they have completed the takeover or the acquisition of BlueMet Wellness, which was listed on the OTC QX under BMWLF. They acquired the company in an all-stock transaction valued at $213 million. And this gives Cresco an effective entry into the Florida medical cannabis market. So Cresco becomes a competitor for Trulieve.
How do you make that? What's their market share in Florida, Javi? Yeah. I feel like they're probably what, third, fourth largest player down there?
Yeah, probably fourth or fifth. I saw they have let me find it because they have a few
James Totem with the percentage, 20%.
Bluma has 8 operational dispensaries and 7 additional retail locations that are either in permitting or in build out phases.
I like Bluma. I've always liked Bluma because I like Soul Global. You know, past that, you know, I don't think they're going to be a major player in Florida when it's all said and done. I think they're a solid entry. I think Cresco is huge. So I think this is a wonderful addition to their book of business. But, you know, it's going to be maybe they catch up to a consortium. You know, I don't see them even coming close to a Trulieve, though.
Yeah. And do we have time for one more? And then we should bring up our guest. We have time for one more. Other big news item, Aphria shareholders confirmed the merger with Tilray in a special meeting where they needed at least 2/3 of the you know, voting shares present there to vote for the merger. The merger got 99.38% approval rate.
Damn.
But Tilray postponed the vote, which is interesting. And this just, it's just out, right? We don't have a lot of details what we do, but we're working on it.
What do you think about that, Avi? I mean, what would be the benefit of not going through this merger right now? Just thinking like devil's advocacy, what is the possible pro there?
None. I don't see any.
I completely agree. I don't see a single good bit of news that could come out of that for Tilray.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, so Tilray, all they're doing is just voting on April 30th instead of you know, a couple weeks earlier. But yeah, like they said is they want to allow Tilray stockholders some additional time to vote on the business combination.
Yeah, which is fine. But I fully expect this to go through. I do want to call it a couple other stocks to watch today.
Let me share my screen while you.
Yeah. Valence. Let's go VLNCF. They are up. What is it? 18.13% on the day on the release of their Q1 financials. Looking good there, y'all. I love Valence. They also made a big acquisition. We had their president on, Jeff Fallows, I think a couple months ago. But he really dove in to their acquisition in the novel food space. So I really like Valence. I think they're a wonderful play. I think 228 right now is the price. I love that. I think it's a huge value upside there. The thing with extraction companies that makes me a little hesitant, though, and Javi, maybe you can give your take on this, is that they run a very expensive business.
Yes. Expensive also means capital intensive, which to me, you know, spells barriers to entry. It's not cheap or easy to set up an extraction facility. It costs millions.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can call it a disadvantage. I call it a competitive moat.
Mm-hmm. All right. I like it. All right. We did have a sundial mention. Do we have shots ready to take? sundial, I think down to 85 cents now. Am I right on that? Or was last time I checked earlier today? But I mean, they're not doing too hot right now. Very downward trend. I think if you want to buy in, you know, low risk play at this point, but I think they do bounce up eventually. I just don't see it happening in the near term. But I mean, that's just not financial advice, just my personal opinion. I think the acquisition of Indiva, the raise, they're really being smart with how they're spending money right now.
They are.
I think a bad.
Yeah. And I think they were smart to you know, make some acquisitions while they were hot. You can see from these higher points about a month ago, it's been nothing but decline.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, on that note, let's take a shot and let's get our guest over. Javier, please show me up. Do me one better. Who do we have coming on?
We have Jesus Quintero, the CEO of MCOA, Marijuana Company of America.
He said it so much better than me.
I would expect so. I mess up so much of my English, you know, my Spanish, I can't mess up.
You said it better than if I would have said it.
Jesus, welcome. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. So everybody, again, this is Marijuana Company of America, OTC listed, MCOA. We're going to hear all about the company today. Jesus, why don't we let you start, though? Why don't we let you tell you a little bit about the company?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Marijuana Company of America is, consider ourselves an emerging company, we're a leader offering unique exposure to the global cannabis sector. Our main focus is hemp CBD products. We have basically what we call premium CBD organic products. All of our products are scientifically driven and double lab tested and, you know, via third party to ensure purity and potency. We sell products, different types of products like pain creams, drops, pain pills, etc. And we've been doing it for a while, since 2015.
OG.
Yeah, and we're a public company trading on the OTC markets. One of our products is a patented product, which is one of the few, if maybe the only one, in the industry. We have a patented brain pill, which helps with focus, and we try to use that and promote it for a lot of people with, you know, mental disabilities, as well as people that have sometimes difficulty just being able to focus on day to day. And it's been very successful for us. Really, kind of unique in that our products are double tested. We test products before it's formulated and we test the products after it's formulated to bring, you know, give customers confidence and surety that, you know, safety is definitely part of what we do. And our products have never been returned because of any issue. We're very proud of that statistic. And we've been doing this since 2015 and our sales have grown exponentially. 2020 was a bit of a setback because of the COVID-19. However, we stayed steady. And we continue to, you know, try to grow and try to organize. And we actually re-strategized our sales platform and our sales strategy. Where now what we're doing is we revamped and created an e-commerce platform. So now what we're going to do is people can go to our website, buy products, get discounts on them, and even get commissions if they want to become a sales affiliate. It's our way of trying to expand in the marketplace. However, with that said, one of the things that makes us unique, and our products sell under a brand name called HempSmart. Okay, even though we're Marijuana Company of America, we have our product brand name is HempSmart. And what we're doing with our products is our main goal, our main vision, our main slogan is HempSmart, enhance and improve your life. CBDs, you know, are proven to affect the human body through the cannabinoid system. And we even have a medical director that walks us through all of our products and blesses everything before it goes out the door. And basically, our products have made a significant impact on the lives of people, and that's what we want. So basically, our goal is to put products in the hands of people to try to enhance and, you know, improve the life that they have. And we're developing new products that can help people like sleep, you know, with some of them with appetite suppressants and things like that. One of the things that's important with us now is we've added an intangible to our sales strategy, which I don't think anyone in our industry is even doing. You know, because of the pandemic, the world is under a bit of a depression because of COVID-19 and everything that we're going through. What we're doing is our main theme is to enhance and improve the lives of people, but we're extending ourselves. We're adding an intangible factor to what we do. We're actually creating a social media interaction where customers that sign up and we're sending text messages, tweets on a daily basis to provide inspiration, to provide enthusiasm, to let people know you're not alone. We're in this with you. Hang in there. Not only do we want to enhance and improve your life with products, we also want you to know that, hey, you know, we're there with you every step of the way. You know, we want to make sure that you know there's a reason for tomorrow. The world has changed. You know, we live in a great place, great country. We've gone through a lot of, you know, things that have affected people's enthusiasm, you know. And we still want people to remember and recognize and keep in mind that this is a great place to be. It's a great country. We're in a great place. And we want people to know that, not just hand the products and say thank you and collect. No, we want to go further than that. We really want to extend our scope, extend our arm to be more than that. And that's our main theme. And we've worked really hard at that. It took a lot of ingenuity, a lot of responsible thinking, and being able to offer that. And with that said, that's one of the things we're doing to try to expand our sales in the country. But now we've embarked on a new mission, which is in addition to that, becoming a global player by expanding into South America now. So now we're going to enter the country.
I mean, that way you can really honor the name, Marijuana Company of America, the America.
There you go. And so now we have a business partner, a new joint venture. We established in São Paulo, Brazil. We're going to enter the Brazilian market. Uh-huh. And we're going to be offering CBD products. CBD products are a little different because I won't bore you with the specifics, but I think it's important to know. With CBD, it's all about education first. See, we don't sell Nike. We don't sell Coke. We don't sell Pepsi. We don't sell products that everybody knows about. People don't know about CBD. Some people still think it's marijuana, which it isn't. Mm-hmm. So we find ourselves with the responsibility first of educating the consumer so they understand what CBD really is. And then after we've done that, then we present them with our products. So now they have a better feel and idea for what we are and what we do. And in Brazil and other countries, when you grow CBD from a farm, it comes out of the ground and has a lot of metals in it. It's just natural. So what happens is that we do an extensive amount of work to make sure we get all those metals out. In Brazil, CBD became very popular many years ago. But then what happened was that when they were growing the CBD, they would keep some of the metals in it, and some of the people actually got sick from it. Mm-hmm. So now the Brazilian equivalent of FDA, called Anvisa, they're controlling the CBD that comes into the hands of people. It must mm-hmm. be prescribed by a physician before it's given. So what we did, we brought CBD products to Brazil, working through physicians. We've met a few of them. We gave products away instead of selling them because we were not interested in making money. We were interested in offering help. So we gave our products, and some of the patients loved it, and it actually made a bigger impact. And because our CBD is clean, double tested, they flipped over it. They love it. Now we're working to try to engage many physicians to work with us so we can offer the products overseas. And our ultimate goal is to really expand in that market and be able to make a difference in the lives of those people, making it affordable as well. So we've actually established a company in Brazil that we're going to do distribution from that'll be able to offer it at local Brazilian prices, not US prices, because we know they can't afford it. We're more interested in being able to offer it and enter the market and make a bigger impact than trying to just think of the dollars and cents on this side of the water.
And be the brand they trust, if you will.
Yes, that is definitely the key. Like I said, my ultimate goal with MCOA is to take our HempSmart product and make it an icon, a household name. I want it to be mentioned with Pepsi, with Coke, you know, with every household name that's out there. I want our HempSmart to be part of that. And we're also
No, I'm sorry. Please go ahead. I have like 30 follow-up questions, but honestly, you talking is giving me more ideas.
Okay. We're also expanding in the country of Uruguay, where we're going to try to establish up there, working in a free trade zone, try to do a little bit of manufacturing there, take advantage of the cost factor. We're going to try to establish ourselves in what's called a free trade zone, where we can actually export to different countries and have literally no export taxes at all. And that'll make it more cost affordable, not only in the US and Brazil, but other countries as well. And we've made contacts with people in Europe as well. We want to really expand. We're already in the UK. We're looking to try to expand into Germany, Italy, and Spain. We want to offer the products to people that can use them, that can actually make a difference in their lives. And we want to continue the extension of the social media. Obviously, that's a little slower because of the language, but we still want to get there. So our goal as an organization.
If you need help with Portuguese, let me know.
Well, that's good to know because we will need it.
let me interrupt you just 1 second here. Oh, Sir Dirty wants to know on the chat, you know, where does your product, your CBD come from? I'm assuming for your U.S. sold products. Is it American CBD or European CBD? And my follow-up question, where will the CBD or cannabis or hemp actually will be coming from in Brazil and in Uruguay? Like, what's the plan there?
Sure. Right now, we have several sources in the USA where there are hemp farms, and we have a manufacturer that actually sells us the oil of the CBD, which is then used to actually manufacture. So the manufacturing has been in the US. We will continue to get CBD from the US because it's, a little better viable source. And then the oils will go overseas, and then the manufacturing may continue. And we'll probably produce out of Uruguay. And because it's across the border from Brazil, we're able to import into Brazil a lot easier. And that way the cost will be more effective. It won't be so high. And that way people can afford it. So that's one thing. All the CBD oils will come from here. And that way we're able to manufacture and be able to distribute.
That's fantastic. Tons of things to cover here. I'm curious with your marketing, the emphasis you place on social media. You say education, being the first entrant followed by the product. You know, how is that viable? Or do you find companies normally skip that step? I'm curious, though, how you intend to deliver that education that's needed and how you're going to do it in different markets, because I'm assuming Brazil and Uruguay, horrible pronunciation, I'm sorry. The education needed in those markets is different than the education needed in Oklahoma.
It's okay. It's actually, the education is more specific. It's more of awareness, being able to help people understand what is CBD. First of all, one of the challenges of my job, and not only my job, but any one of us, we're not typical. If you don't think outside of the box, you will not be successful. Standard advertising will not work in our industry. Why? There's too many regulations. The FDA will not allow you to say certain things about it. The pharmaceutical companies are going to challenge you on everything you talk about. So your best avenue to create that awareness, to let people know about who you are, what you do, is social media. That is the strength of advertising in the 21st century, social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of those avenues are the best way to reach the ultimate consumer, to let them see what's going on, to let them know what's happening. There's no way they're going to know. I mean, of course, traditional commercials on TV is a great way to let everybody know what's happening. But with our type of industry, it's difficult. So our best avenue is social media. And we use a lot of social media companies right now. We are blasting our name as far as we can push it, so that people understand and know who we are and what we do.
That's awesome. I know you had earnings today. Can we talk a little bit about the results and give us your take on the results and why people should be excited for the future, right? As you said, you had a challenging 2020. And that could either be seen as, okay, this is bad, or this is a good entry point. So, of course, I won't ask you to make the bear case. So what's the bull case here?
I'm actually very proud of our numbers, and I'm very excited about what we accomplished in 2020. The thing is, what's important for us is vision. Our numbers are substantially lower from last year. So yeah, we lost less money. Last year, I think we lost like over $20 million. This year, we only lost 12. And actually, our sales are lower because of the pandemic, but our operating expenses are down more than 50%. So we've streamlined a lot of expenses. And in the past, we had a different management a year ago. I took over I'm almost at the end of 2019. And I've given us a different look. For example, in next week, in about a week or so, the company is going to launch something that's historical, that it's never done, ever. Mm-hmm. It's going to issue its first annual report. So in that annual report, what does that mean? Companies issue annual reports all the time. But in our particular case, we're going to issue an annual report that for the first time, people are going to know who is behind MCOA. In the past, nobody knew who the CEO was or see the face of the CEO of this organization. Nobody had visibility as an investor as, okay, I put my money in there. Who are they? That's changed. Everybody knows who MCOA is. First, I put my name and my face so that they all know who I am and what I represent. And it's important that MCOA show faces as to who's supporting it. Our annual report shows all the people that we have working with us, our entire management team, our board of directors, our strategic partners, all of the people that are working hard for the investors, not for ourselves. We work for the investors, and we want them to have the visibility to see who's working their money to try to get them, you know, enhance and improve their shareholder value as well as what we're doing for our actual customers. So the main theme of our annual report is to let everybody know we are a people company. We're about people, and that's what we care about, and that's what we're shooting for. There are a lot of strategies, a lot of challenges, but you know, we have the right posture, we have the right philosophy, we have the right mission statement, we know where we're going, and we know where we want to be, and we deal with obstacles as they come our way because we believe in ourselves. We truly do. And you know, no one that's in our company is not with that program. Everybody that works for us, that's with us in every step of the way, believes in what we're doing.
I love that. So, you know, I'd love to dive in a little bit to your e-commerce side. A, what sparked that? And B, talk to me a little bit more about the importance of it being multilingual. Obviously, you're going to be in different markets here, but even multilingual within the U.S. seems like it's important nowadays.
Yeah, I think in the U.S. we're trying to build our platform so that it's multilingual. Latin communities is a big Latin community in the United States. I want to make sure that we don't like become just general. I really want to segregate it and be able to reach as many audiences as we can. And it's very dynamic. It's very diverse because it's not just about the language. What about the different age groups? You have millennials. You have the baby boomers. We have to be able to make sure that we're comprehensive enough to be able to expand ourselves to reach everyone, not just from a language perspective, but even from a cultural perspective and age group perspective, so that everybody understands this product is not just for this group of people, but rather it's for all that can take advantage of it. You know, we're all sitting in one boat, that we're all different languages, different age groups. All that is a different chair to sit in, but we're still on the same boat. We're still part of the same audience.
Fantastic. And when did that unveil, if you will? When was the date of that?
Mm-hmm. We unveiled our sales platform about a week ago. It took us not too long ago, because we were under what's called a mid-level management program, where we were selling through referral programs. And that group had been going on for a while. So we had to make sure that our platform was ready. We rebranded all of our products. Everything has been synchronized with the new platform. And we took our time to get it together because it was that critical. We went back and made sure that all the disclosures on the actual labeling and all that good stuff was adequate. And then once our platform was established, you know, we're starting to phase out our MLM program. We're still making some sales, but we want to be able to really wanted to launch it well. So we waited. We spent a lot of time on web designing and everything that's there. And there's still more work to do. You know, we really want to be able to reach the audience and, you know, not just make the sale. I don't want to see it as, you know, I just want to sell. No, I want to do more than that. And I want to do it with our social media, reaching out to the customers, making sure there's a bond with the customer, not just on the product, but like I talked about, the emotional as well.
Yeah, I've got to follow up on that. You know, a lot of this conversation so far today has really been about MCOA being for the people. You know, and whether that's your investors or the consumers in whatever markets that you are attacking or will be attacking. You know, you're talking to an audience probably of cannabis and in industry professionals and or potential investors or current investors. So I'd love you to address how you see that specifically benefiting your company in the long term. I know we touched on it a bit being the brand they trust, but maybe if there's anything else you want to dive in and add to that of how this makes you worth investing in.
I think one of the things that we're doing, aside from everything we talked about today, there's a third factor, and that is, I think the cannabis sector is a very unique sector. I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I think there's a lot of companies that are worth a lot and do a lot, but you know, our sector, of course, as you know, the Farm Bill came out like, what, 2 or 3 years ago. So people were still on the fence. People still didn't know or believe and what cannabis was going to do. Yeah. There's a lot of people that have a myth about it, about how many millions of dollars it's going to make. But, you know, it's like many, many years ago when healthcare started coming out, a lot of volume, very little profit. So we see that as an opportunity to make acquisitions. And what we're doing is we're looking in the sector to see acquisitions where we have companies that we feel we can partner with that may not have the financial strength that to be able to support themselves. However, we can, as a public company with funding that we can get, bring them in with us, do the synergy, be able to help build them together with us. It's not about taking over. It's about strengthening and working as partners, because one company could be doing really well and another one could be doing really well individually, but we feel we can capture and come together as a partnership. We're stronger together than individual. And what we want to do is create that. We are very big. We do not work with vendors or customers. In our eyes, we work with partners. And we have that partnership mentality in all that we do and all that we want to do. And that's the posture that we're taking as we do acquisitions as well.
Which means your vendors are going to love working with you.
But we do our best.
Your partners, I should say. You know, and I think that's an important point, though. You know, I mean, to have a partner that will work for you can only increase the opportunity here. Sorry, Javi, I know I've talked a lot there.
No.
And I have to say that it's not about working for us, it's working with us. Yeah. That's the idea that we have. And the thing is, for me, is my personal opinion is, listen, it's not, I don't believe in the philosophy that if I have something great going on, why is it that I'm the only one that should make money? Why not share it with my partners? And if we all make money together, we're all gonna have skin in the game. And we're all going to push it because we all want to make money and we all want to be successful. Although, I mean, I look beyond the dollars and cents, although profitability is important, sales is important, but what we do, the image that we portray, will always be more important because the dollars will always follow.
Indeed. Well, somebody says that's the single smartest comment I've heard from an operator. So definitely appreciate it.
It's also a Benzinga philosophy, right? Doesn't our CEO, Jason Rasnick, say that a lot? Money follows, you know, you put in the work, then money follows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a We Bet Wall Street is curious about the extraction process you use. Do you use distillation to isolate certain molecules? Have you been experiencing or researching any new branches, et cetera?
At this time, basically, most of our manufacturing is formulated with manufacturers. However, we're working with one of our new partners called EcoX, which works on innovations and inventions, and they're trying to develop a new way to do the processing of the hemp with the extraction using isolates. And this is one of the strengths of our partnership, as they develop better methodologies and processes than what's going on right now. It'll make us more efficient. Better quality hemp that we use and the hemp oil. Although we're working with manufacturers that give us good quality right now, we're not involved in that process because we outsource it, however. But it's definitely one of the things that's on our agenda as we want to improve the quality of what we do. We're not sitting pretty saying we're set in life. No, we still want to improve ourselves internally as to all of the products and what we do, and even develop new products as well.
That's wonderful. Javi, do you have any further questions before we let Jesus give us a final thought here?
A bunch, but you know, we unfortunately run out of time. So we
got to have you back on. I think you're a fan favorite, my friend.
Thank you.
Aside from the SEO and the growth we're seeing, the multilingual tools you're rolling out and e-commerce platforms, I'm super excited to continue to follow you. Would you like to leave our audience with one final thought and where they can find you, if they can shoot your IR team an email?
Sure. We have, you can send emails to our investor website. It's called marijuanacompanyofamerica.com. And what I can say is, you know, it's very exciting for us in our company. We've come a long way. We've gone through our struggles. You know, we're not embarrassed about where we were before, and we're very proud of who we are today. And what we want to do is make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to say, we're going to be very successful. We're going to make a lot of money. What I say to you is, I guarantee you that we are working hard for all our investors, for all of our customers, and for all the different markets that we're going to touch with what we do. We want to leave fingerprints We want to leave our brand. We want to leave our marks and all that we do. We're interested in everybody knowing that we're out there making a difference, not just with the customers and the vendors, but with potential partners that we can work with to make a difference in this industry. We want to shape it and lead the way in it.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being here with us, Jesus. We're going to have you on again. Very much appreciate your time. We will see you, I believe, in June, if not, no, in May. In May 13th and 14th, our small cap event, Jesus will be presenting Marijuana Company of America. So very excited to see you there again.
Can't wait to come back. Can't wait to come back. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Wonderful interview, Javi. Wow. What a day. I'm excited for our next one too. We got to keep moving, man. But wow.
Yeah, let's just do two quick news items or three, like lightning round. Cannabis brand Leune or Loon or Loin, I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's spelled L-E-U-N-E, has raised $5 million with backing from, check this out, Carmelo Anthony, Lala Anthony, Ooh. And Casa Verde Capital. And several other interesting big investors like Anthony Saleh, who represents rap artists like Nas and Future. We had an investment from Rich Paul, who is known for representing LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Big news. Other news, Headset, an analytics company, published a report saying U.S. cannabis sales will hit $28 billion in 2022. Our good friends at Yushi acquired Dalitso facility and 9 acres of land for $22 million. Last one, Molson Coors and Hexo Cannabis's joint venture called Trust Beverage will launch 6 new products this summer.
I'm sorry, what LP was that again? What LP was that? It was Hexo? It was Hexo?
Which one? No, a JV. So Molson Coors and Hexo have
I know,
a JV.
Hexo. I'm telling you all.
Which
I'm
LP?
I'm bullish on Hexo. Anyway, thank you for that rapid fire news. Maybe we'll get to some at the very end here as well. But we have an incredible next guest for you all. She is part of the Cannabis Advisory Council for Benzinga. Lori Kibbe, co-founder of King's Garden. You have seen her with us before. She is a powerhouse. Lori, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well, thank you. I hope you both are well as well.
We are. Patrick is so jealous he can't be on here right now. I have a question for you from him later. Yeah, we're super excited to have you. But Lori, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience that may not know you and who King's Garden is?
Sure. King's Garden is an indoor cultivator of cannabis here in California. We came together in 2015, and now I think we're one of the largest indoor cultivators in the state. We employ 200 plus employees where we operate 250,000 square feet with another 415 or so under construction due to open over the next 18 to 24 months, and which will triple our revenues and get us prepared, we think, hopefully at one point here for national distribution opportunities. So that's who we are.
What about an IPO? Have you considered that? I know you work with many publicly traded companies or you have worked over the years. Have you ever considered an IPO?
We have. We've looked at it multiple times.
He's baiting you in, Lori. He's baiting you in.
You know, we figured that our focus should be on our bottom line. And, you know, going public takes a lot of time and energy, and it's a whole business unto itself internally. Yes. So we were very close in 2018. We decided not to proceed. We've looked several times since. We're looking now, and we're trying to gauge it with what's possible here in the United States. And don't think we need to rush if it's imminent here, you know. So it's a balancing act for us. And we're not in need of capital. So
ooh, lucky you.
Yeah.
I mean, so, not lucky, you successful know, you.
Exactly. We haven't raised any capital since 2018. We're fully funded from profits and cash flow. And so given that, you know, what's the objective often for going public is for raising funds, and we haven't had a need to do that. So again, it's just one of the many factors that we look at as we're considering this.
Now, I prepared this question. I asked Patrick if he wanted me to ask you a question. He literally gave me the same question. Javi, I'm sure, has this question as well. But with the recent news, recent within the last few months of multiple large companies taking stake into California, how does that affect your growth opportunity? Do you want to deepen what you're doing in the state in Coachella Valley? Or I'm curious how that affects your view of California versus the US.
Well, several of those companies have been in touch with us. So many of the, so I'm really not at liberty to
say what you can. No worries. Yeah.
But as I said at the start, we're expanding, we're tripling our size, or more than doubling our size, almost tripling our size, in preparation either for teaming up with somebody who is already a large multi-state operator who wants to bring our brand elsewhere and wants to have a large footprint here. Again, looking at what happens with cross-border opportunities, when that happens, mm-hmm. being positioned to do that. We've always had a philosophy that being the best at what we do, being centralized on the mainstream of transportation across the country is a good strategy, and that we haven't had to tackle the infrastructure requirements, the licensing requirements, all of the different things that the MSOs have. But we are, I would imagine, always will be a good target for MSOs as they look, or for other industries as that becomes a possibility for them.
Interesting.
I don't know, you know, it's a little bit different than a lot of people, their approach to the business.
It's refreshing, though. It's very refreshing.
Very happy investors, and make contributions and we make money.
I remember meeting some of your investors. I believe I was with Michael in Colombia a few years ago. Is that possible, or am I?
Michael Stewart.
King.
Michael Stewart, Dr. Stewart.
No, yes. I think Michael King. Your CEO.
Yeah. Was he in Colombia? I mean, he's a co-founder and CEO.
And I met a few of your investors and they were really, really happy. And this was like 3 years ago, right? Where you weren't even nearly as big as you are today.
Yeah. Well, we try to keep them happy. You know, it's important. We operate like that's a good mental philosophy for a private or a public company, is to make sure your investors are happy and you're building value. And that's what our focus is. And sometimes we're a little counterintuitive to the rest of the market, but we think we've been successful at what we're doing. So
I love that. So Lori, I looked at your website prior to this and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your hiring practices. I think it said something to the effect of you only hire those who've been recommended by those in your company. So it seems, from an outside perspective, and to play devil's advocate, I truly don't know one way or the other, but to play devil's advocate, it seems like you might close yourself off from some talent there. But I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, King's Garden, one of the ways that it, I think, maintains the quality is that we have very, very, I don't like the word rigid, but really clear guidelines about how we grow and how we process and trim and package. And so what we have found is that referral is the best way to bring somebody in, because everybody who starts with us starts in the same place. And they start with a 90-day apprentice program in cultivation. Mm-hmm. And we see if they're best suited for that. What happens if they're not, we have other divisions. We have manufacturing and we have our trimming and packaging departments, and we can move them across the company. But we always feel like we know when they come in referred to us, there's a whole level of screening that's already gone on, because people really like their jobs with us. So they're not going to risk that by making a bad recommendation. And then we have our own vetting process once you're here. And as I said, we have almost 200 employees, so we haven't had a problem hiring anybody. And most of our employees stay with us a very long time. We have a very, very low turnover rate by anybody leaving us. We have people who don't cut the mustard, but they don't leave us.
Proof is in the pudding. I mean, that's proof right there that it works. So I appreciate you addressing that. I was just super curious how you all came to that. Go ahead, Avi.
I just want to switch gears completely because, Lori is a wealth of knowledge, and not just in finance. And I know we love finance and it's her topic, but I know she's also very passionate about legalization and decrim in general.
I am.
And you have a whole, you know, thesis around states not getting in line, or actually the other way around, right? Like federal representatives not getting in line with what states are doing, you know, what states are up to. And this is specifically or especially true for Republican leaning states. Can you maybe walk a little bit through this?
Yeah, I mean this is the largest. This is a conundrum I cannot get my hands around, and I'm very passionate about trying to understand it. So of course I'm open to any conversation about it. But when you look at the number of states, whether they're red or blue or in between, that have legalized either medical or recreational, you wonder how it's possible that both at the Senate level, that we don't have representatives who are supposed to. I mean, you know, going back to, you know, American government 101, they're supposed to be the representatives of their state. And when a state is legal in one or the other or both, and their representative is not full out wanting to vote in favor, it doesn't make sense to me. And I understand, you know, there's this whole conversation about legalization versus decriminalization. And I think it leaves open a question when you think about at the federal level, if you decriminalize it, what's the difference of that of legalization, right? I think legalization is more
generate money. I mean, legalization.
One decriminalizes, which can be at the federal level, says, okay, it's not a crime. I think when you use legalization, at least the way I understand it, you set a standard so all the states can come together and the way in which the country as a whole can start to manage the process and make it understandable, make it a little bit more uniform. You set a standard, right? To decriminalize, absolutely. And legalization should have a component of decriminalization. It should be both prospective and perspective, right? Looking backwards and forwards to ensure that we handle the social equity issues that have gone on for far too long. Legalization does that. Does a piece of it, decriminalization does another piece of it. I think they have to be combined in some reasonable way. So anyway, that's my thinking. And maybe I'm digging too deep and have too much of a, you know, a mind thinking about it. But to me, it's just a conundrum why the feds have had such a problem. The states have spoken, you know, come on.
Yeah. And I have a quick follow-up question, and I know it's another topic you hold very dear to your heart. And this comes from the chat, but I know it'll hit the nail on the head. You know, We Bet Wall Street is talking about tax revenue being lost. And you know, this is particularly, you know, relevant in a context of fiscal deficits like the ones we're seeing right now. Can you elaborate a little bit into you know, how this whole conundrum, as you call it, affects tax revenue on the federal and state level, and how things would change? Should we decriminalize or should we legalize federally?
Well, I mean, obviously, I can't quote dollar figures, but when you look at the taxation across states, it's obviously a huge revenue opportunity. I think that when states start to work with the federal government and you come up with reasonable taxation programs, you can't overtax something or all you're going to do is continue to create a divide, right? Trying to bring an industry into the mainstream and get rid of illegal grows and all the illegal activities. So I think there has to be some coordination between the states and the feds. Until the feds get it together, states are left to their own devices, right? And we all know what goes on in the industry, those of us who play by the rules and those who don't. And taxation is one of those divides, right? I just heard this morning about, you know, New York is looking to tax based on THC content. And
I was just about to ask you about the New York tax record. Please continue.
Like, it's the weirdest way to tax something ever.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And all it does is in some ways reduce the potential for high quality, high testing product, right?
It's written by people who don't know anything about cannabis.
Exactly. It speaks to the fact that people don't understand what they're trying to tax. You know, it's all together. I think once you take away all the biases and you start to legalize, you start to then allow for people to really become educated, most definitely those who are setting regulation. Not that they're not trying to educate themselves, but there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding and trying to put something in place without that. Though there are great advisors, I don't want to say, I mean, I know some of the people who are certainly working with various governments and they're very informed and very smart individuals. But because it's so bifurcated and so unique to each state, it, I think it makes it difficult. I can't imagine how MSOs manage it all.
Yeah, personally. Well, part of the New York tax structure, a lot of it is going back to the community. They've been very open about that. So I'm curious, you know, there have been complaints, though, about it being too high of a tax structure. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts there or if you'd like to abstain, either one.
Well, I mean, you know, I think that it's wonderful to be able to give back to your communities. I think using tax dollars to do so is can be effective. Again, I think because of the it's a new industry, effectively, right? I think as it matures, it will stabilize and you'll find a balancing act between taxation and what's appropriate, because you can't tax a company out of business. And I know that here in California, everybody was very concerned about the taxes and how high they were and that the market wouldn't absorb that, but it has, you know, and businesses have figured out how to be profitable in it. And the consumers has stated that they're willing to pay the taxes that are added on to it. So I think, you know, you have to look at all of that to determine what's the right strategy for it. But it mm-hmm. seems to work. I think it needs to be appropriately addressed, though. I don't know a THC mm-hmm. tax is the right way.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that should be real.
I don't either. I mean, I could see it by pound or dollars or, you know, the things we're used to.
Yeah.
The THC tax does make a little bit of sense in some way, right? For instance, let's say, you know, if you're an adult use, I'm trying to put myself in a position where from some perspective, it makes sense. Because to me, when someone tells me, you know, there's a THC tax, all I can think about is, dude, you have no idea of how THC works. Some people need higher percentages of, or concentrations or levels of THC to medicate for certain medical ailments, real ailments, not just to get higher, right? Not to get more stoned.
We're getting into the insurance conversation here.
Well, I mean, think about it. What if they told you that they're going to tax you on your wine based on the alcohol content?
I was going to bring that example up. I would be kind of willing to pay more for vodka than beer, right?
We've had this conversation for like 3 weeks straight, Lori. Javier loves taxes. I don't know what is going on.
No, I don't love taxes.
He loves paying taxes.
Like the right amount of taxes are good.
Do you think that taxes should be higher on wine over beer because of the alcohol content?
I mean, not really. I don't say they should. I'm saying there's way worse tax structures, right?
Like
there's worse things to tax than
how much more time can we spend on calculating our taxes every quarter or every week or every month?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of actually, this is a good transition. Let's transition to quality. Let's talk about quality of product. To you, Lori, does that mean What does that mean? I'll just start there.
Well, quality is to me everything. That's what King's Garden has built its reputation on.
Does that include the THC content in terms of?
It partially, absolutely. It's built on the entire product, how it looks, how it smells, how it tests, right? Mm-hmm. Is it consistently that? So that when you buy a product, is it always that? You know, that to me is very, very important. And THC content and cannabinoid content is part of that analysis. I think that we misjudge the consumer. Consumers are sophisticated, certainly a California consumer is a sophisticated user of cannabis and knows the difference. And I think that those are the things, that's where we should be focusing. And I think regulation, you know, testing, I heard your speaker before about, you know, CBD, where it has no testing requirements. I think if you want to be able to provide your consumer with a product that they can trust, it starts with testing, right? Which reveals the component of quality, which is its content. right? Because that makes a difference in the use of, just like, as we said before, the amount of alcohol, in your beverage, people judge it by that. And I think that's important for cannabis as well.
So absolutely. How wide of a variant is that from, I mean, we'll just, if you can, without naming names, I mean, but in like the tier one and two operators, do you have a different consideration of THC content being quality than say the top tier MSO? So try and keep it at a high level here.
Well, I think that it's more than just the THC content because of the way it tastes, you know, the effect, how it looks, all of that gives you an experience, right? So, but we, you know, I can talk about King's Garden. We have some strains that test as high as in the mid to high 30s for THC as well as cannabinoids. And we have some that are in the high 20s. I think that the range, I don't want to say one is better than the other. I just think that for a sophisticated smoker who understands all of the product and looks at that, that's a component of their evaluation as to whether or not they want to try it and whether they'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yours is great. I can attest firsthand. Your stuff is magnificent.
I agree.
I'm lucky enough to try it.
Magnificent. He was like rising to the clouds as he said that, Lori.
Delicious cannabis is hard to come by, really. Like, really delicious cannabis. Awesome stuff.
It is.
And
it is. And I think that's part of it, isn't it? You want it to be delicious. You want it to smell fabulous, you know, in addition to how it smokes or how it affects you.
Absolutely.
You know,
that's a perfect.
There's a young woman on, I think she has a YouTube channel, and all she does is she looks at how it looks, she smells it, she looks at the tests, then she tests it and gives her experience. And, you know, so I learned a lot from watching one of her shows because she looked at everything from how it looked in the jar to when she opened it and how it smelled. And you really realize that people, it makes a difference, the whole experience. Yep.
I think you're going to see Javi on that show soon. I feel like he started salivating after you were describing what she does. Lori, thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure. Far from the last time we're going to be talking to you.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You as well. Thanks so much. Lori Kibbe, co-founder and CFO of King's Garden. Truly an OG and a powerhouse in this industry.
Should be called Queen's Garden. You know, I'm sure it's not the first time she's heard that, but
y'all, I told you we had two great interviews today. I think you all were very, very chatty today. Thank you all. Love it. We're going to be back tomorrow. I think Javi and Patrick are going to be talking about some stocks. And then Javi, you want to go ahead and announce again who we have next week?
Yeah, we have on Monday, we have Kyle Detweiler from Clever Leaves CLVR on the NASDAQ. Canadian, Colombian cannabis company, super interesting. American, actually, yes. So check it out. On Tuesday, we have Fabian Monaco from Gage Cannabis. They started trading on the CSE recently as well. Amazing play out of Michigan. Great opportunity for investing. We will be chatting with them, and we have another show on Thursday. And if I told you I remember who the guests are,
I think Thursday we got some clean tech stocks we're going to be talking about all day, right? So,
sir, that is it.
All right, so y'all, we have two guests for you next week. We'll have several the following week. Please reach out if you all want to hear from somebody. events@benzinga.com. We need to get a cannabis hour email going up in here. If we don't already. Regardless, thanks, y'all. Appreciate you being here. Please tune in tomorrow at 4:30. Please also tune into the Clean Tech event next week. Outside of that, Javi, anything else, my friend? Always good to see you, Argentinian beauty.
Peace, love, and profit through cannabis. That's it.
Awesome, y'all. Have a great one. Pura vida.
Pura vida.
Later.
See you tomorrow.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel anytime.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it, but nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.